5 minutes past the hour. It's a Tuesday, a transcendent Tuesday, and Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist by trade, well, actually now a vintner by trade, and a lot of experience in pharmaceuticals, and he's a science guy. And we love Don for what he's brought us over the years. Not only is he an expert teacher in the book of Genesis and the biblical creation story, but we have, okay, Don, we've hammered climate change to death here, but this is a little different look at it than we've had before. Some new research.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, climate's going to change. Mm-hmm. And the question is man having any effect on what we're seeing.
Well, the question is also doing. The cost. This article, in fact, there's a link in our chat window at brokenroadradio.com if anybody would like to kind of follow along with us in the discussion. The sustainable development costs for every American between now and 2030, $2,000 a year is what the UN Conference on Trade and Development estimates. The global price tag comes to $5.5 trillion per year. So it seems to me that it's really about the money. You know, there's money being spent all over the place to combat a problem that would occur anyway and will probably continue to occur. And that's climate change, because climate has always changed. This article, though, has a couple of things to communicate to us that's different. One is, I'll give you the headline, fixation on CO2 ignores the real driver of temperature, experts say. Don, what are they talking about?
Oh, well, yes. So is CO2 the real driver of temperature? And yes, it turns out that the answer to that question is no, and we've talked about it many times before on this program, that, oh, lo and behold, it's the sun, climate change. And, you know, one of the graphs in the article is this geological time scale, which I don't agree with the time scale, but it shows the relationship, or it shows CO2 concentrations in supposedly in the past versus temperature fluctuations. And if you look at this graph, you'll see that the thing that pops out the most is that there is no correlation whatsoever between CO2 and temperature. And as is pointed out in the article, they say, well, you know, CO2 rises with temperature, but CO2 actually follows temperature. So the temperature rises, and then the CO2 rises. And that rise in CO2 could be 800 years later. So the impact that, and this is the most important thing about all of this climate change, hyperbole that is out there, is that man is causing the CO2 to increase and therefore causing the environment to change and all of this other stuff. Well, is that really true? And even the IPCC data themselves and what they say is that, okay, well, you know, before the Industrial Revolution, it looked like the parts per million, the CO2 was about 280, and now it's about 430, and it's, you know, we've had the Industrial Revolution, and we've been burning fossil fuels and all of this, and so, you know, there's been about almost a doubling in CO2. Isn't that a shame, and isn't that, you know, cause for alarm? Well, it turns out that of that 180 parts per million, at most, man has contributed 30 parts per million. And the other thing to note is that CO2 concentrations were much, much higher in the past. For example, over 2,000 to 3,000, and if you believe this chart, way back in the beginning, in the Cambrian period, it was almost 4,000 or 6,000 parts per million. So why are we getting so alarmed at having CO2 levels at 400, you know, parts per million. And so we, the reason, of course, is not having to do with science. And this article points out that what the IPCC and others on the climate alarmist side say is a bunch of malarkey. In that their conclusions are completely wrong, and that climate is not affected by CO2 increases or decreases, but as I pointed out, that CO2 indeed is increases in CO2 follow temperature increases. So what's causing temperature variations? And the primary cause of temperature variation is, guess what?
Solar activity.
Solar activity. Yes. Yes. We now have a very good understanding.
Look of shock on my face here to learn that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Solar cycles. And it turns out that, you know, we get a lot of solar activity every 1,000 years or so. And if you go back in if you go back in man's history, it's very clear that, you know, we had the Roman warming period. Then there was the medieval warming period, and then now we've got the modern warming period. And they're all about 1,000 years apart. And it seems like the warming periods, based on history and based on what data we can collect, you know, last for about 200 years, and then it starts to cool down. So the sun is the primary source of energy for our planet, has been since the beginning. God created the greater sun to rule the day, and of course the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night, and the lesser light is the moon, and the greater light is the sun. And God created those from the very beginning. And, you know, to make a pleasant environment here on Earth. And it, you know, just so happens that, well, man likes a certain temperature range. And sometimes it gets a little too warm and sometimes it gets a little too cold. But we do have two legs, and now we've got all kinds of means of transportation. So we can go if we wanted to, like they did in the past, people did in the past. We could migrate to different areas of the Earth to find the temperature range that we're comfortable with. But, you know, man tends to build cities, and we don't like to move away from our cities. And so we just kind of stay in one place. And then when it gets really cold, we complain that it's really cold and it's been cold for a long time. And I wonder if next winter is going to be even colder than this winter.
You know, it's something
or if it starts to warm up.
As we've discussed before, the thermal mass created by those big cities, all the concrete, all the buildings, has actually increased temperature there greater than it has in urban areas. But the point is that the heat is coming from the sun, not from the CO2. In fact, this article makes it clear. I'll just read the paragraph. This is recent research, by the way, from about 5 years ago. They further found that when temperature and atmospheric CO2 reached a certain level, organic carbon burial drastically increased, eventually resulting in a significant decrease in atmospheric CO2 levels. Now, you and I have talked about this before. Part of God's design was an automatic response by the Earth to absorb and dissolve CO2. It protects us. It's part of the plan.
It is part of the plan. And so when we need more CO2 in the atmosphere, you know, it's released. And when we need less, it's absorbed. And, you know, one of the greatest absorption of CO2 is actually plants. And so, you know, plants need CO2. I mean, CO2 is really plant food. And so and then some plants like much higher concentrations than we have today of carbon dioxide. We found in, you know, in the past, in the these warming periods, for example, that and more CO2 in the atmosphere caused an abundance of grain and produce and products, food grain, for example, than we do when CO2 is lower. And that's, you know, it's obvious. I mean, why is this so complicated to understand? It's obvious that, you know, plants need CO2. We are not at, you know, at all near any, if there is a dangerous level of CO2. Okay, so, you know, I'm a winemaker, and if you stuck your head in a vat of you know, fermenting wine, you got a high concentration of CO2, and it's been known that workers in wineries, for example, cleaning out wine tanks have suffocated because of the concentration of CO2 in the tank. And so you got to be careful in those situations. But in our atmosphere, I mean, come on, you know, we can tolerate, the atmosphere can tolerate much higher concentrations of CO2. What we're, by trying to limit the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, that is man-made CO2, we actually ultimately, if you think about it, will cause a loss of food production, because your fields, I don't care how much fertilizer you're going to put on the fields, you still need CO2 for that plant to grow. And you could have all the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium that you want, and the plant should be nice and happy. But without CO2, it's not growing. So we need CO2. And a matter of fact, in we've learned this. And if you, this is the problem with man leaving agriculture and going into the big cities. He doesn't have this connection with nature and doesn't understand the basic principles that nature teaches us. For example, you know, our friends in the agricultural departments and those that have greenhouses, guess what they do in greenhouses? In greenhouses, they purposely pump CO2 into the greenhouse so that the plants can thrive and thrive wholeheartedly in the greenhouse as opposed to, you know, out in the field. So if we could just build enough greenhouses and increase the CO2, you know, we'd be in fine shape. But we don't have to do that, because all we need to do is just let nature do its thing and let nature manage the CO2 levels. And, you know, we'd be fine. But no, we've got to have a program to pump trillions upon trillions of dollars into this foolishness of saying, oh, we've got to have neutral CO2 emissions from a power plant. Well, okay, so we spend millions and millions and billions of dollars on a plant that sucks CO2 out of the atmosphere, converts it into methane, natural gas, and then we burn the natural gas, and we feel good about ourselves because we haven't added to any of the CO2. But this is ludicrous, because we got, in this country at least, and in other countries, we have so much natural gas that all we need to do, and we know that natural gas is a clean burning source of fuel. All we need to do is burn our natural gas for the energy that we need. You know, what makes a rich country? What's the one thing that makes a country rich? And that's
productivity.
Their energy source.
Yeah. Okay. Energy.
Their energy source. If you don't have an energy source, guess what? You're buying it from somebody else, and you cannot become, you know, rich, even if you're the cleverest, you know, society on earth. If you have abundance of energy, like we do in this country, then you can become rich, and with wealth, of course, comes responsibility and power. enhance the reason why we, in particular the United States, is being hammered right now for not only not producing energy so we can buy it from other countries, and we were energy independent under, you know, a certain president, and now we are very much an energy dependent nation again. Not because we don't have the energy source, but because, you know, we're not allowed to drill, we're not allowed to use natural gas, and all of these foolishness that comes out of these policies and, you know, the Paris Agreement, the climate change agreement, which taxes us at the expense of other nations like China, that's exempt. That's exempt from all of these regulations that are imposed on us because we were a prosperous nation, and we can't have you being prosperous because of all of your energy at the expense of other nations that supposedly are still in developing. I wouldn't call China still developing. And so...
you know, Peter Zeihan, and David and I have talked about Peter Zeihan's globalization theories here off and on the air. In his book, The End of the World is Just the Beginning, he makes the point that if we squelch all production and use of fossil fuels, that is gasoline and natural gas, the only heat source countries will have to warm themselves in the winter will be coal, which is dirty to burn. Natural gas and gasoline are actually the lowest carbon emission fuels that we have, with the exception possibly of nuclear energy, which people seem to think is not on the table. Another factor here, and this article covers it, if we could squelch all CO2 production right now, cut it off, our carbon footprint becomes zero, it would still take up to 1,000 years for CO2 levels to fall to where they've been targeted. It just does not dissipate that rapidly. The science behind this is not science, it's politics.
It is purely politics, and that therein lies the question. And you can find that information even, you know, on the NASA's website, for example, on CO2. They point out that, you know, CO2 concentrations aren't going to come down in a year or two after we, you know, stop all fossil fuel burning. It's not going anywhere anytime soon. Which is, a point. It's realism. I mean, so to try to attack, and the other interesting aspect of this is, if you look at all of the supposed greenhouse gases, CO2 was, we say that it's a greenhouse gas. It's a very, very poor greenhouse gas, and it doesn't cause a lot of reflection of the reflected heat from the Earth, which, you know, came from the sun originally, to increase our temperatures here on Earth. It's a very poor greenhouse gas. Water, on the other hand, water vapor is a very good greenhouse gas. And so if you have a terrarium, the thing that's increasing the temperature in the terrarium is the water vapor, not the CO2 in the terrarium. So, the basic science, there's so much junk science out there related to CO2. And as we've said, it's purely political. You know, the optimal concentration, for example, of CO2 for trees and for wheat and for rice, essential plants that we need for our ecosystem, the optimal levels is between 800 and 1,500 parts per million. We're at 400. We need to double our... our CO2 in order to start getting to the optimal levels for plant growth and to feed the planet. You don't hear any of these folks that are on the CO2 bandwagon talking about feeding the planet, they kind of disconnect from the reality that lower CO2 means lower food production.
If we stop the production of natural gas, that is one of the primary components of fertilizer, which means much of the world will do without fertilizer, which means famine. It can and will happen. Yes.
And if you read the book of Revelation, you know that, you know, one of the plagues that will affect us is famine. You know, we can see that building in the politicians and all of this, this globalism is a scenario that's not going to protect our planet, that actually is going to make things worse and actually cause and lead to famines. Starvation. The globalists aren't going to care, you know, because they're going to have their food because they can pay for it. But the poorest of the poor, and most of us will be poor by that time, are going to be the ones to suffer. And that's going to be okay. That'll be okay for the globalists because that means there's less people to manage and control. The essence of all of this is really quite evil, and it doesn't come from the Father of Lights. It comes from the other Father that is of dark. So this whole agenda is not to aid the planet, but it really is to cause major problems and ultimately, you know, to control humanity.
Once again, the article is linked to you in the chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com. And I failed to mention that Dr. Don is a member of the board of Creation Moments. CreationMoments.com is their website, and there you'll find a reservoir of scientific information, scientifically developed information that supports and explains the biblical story of creation. And Don, on this program, you and we have talked about over the years getting back, the need to get back to a connected lifestyle. Living the way God intended us to live on the planet and what real stewardship means. And this is this whole climate change thing is rushing us in the wrong direction. And I'm glad we were able to cover some of this with you today. And we missed you last couple of weeks. Good to have you back.
Yeah, I miss being here. So, the feeling is mutual.
Well, we'll see you next week. That's the plan here. And again, Dr. Don, the member of the board of Creation Moments, their website again, creationmoments.com. Don, thanks so much. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good seeing you too.